All right, week seven. It's kind of a, compared to last week, a little bit of a chill slate. But in this year, which top 10 team will go down? Because you know that Oklahoma, maybe Cincinnati, Michigan State, they're going to be on upset alert before they even kick off. That's just kind of the way the season has been. Let's welcome in Brett Ciancia from Pick Six Previews. Did you expect this kind of chaos in this season like we've had in the first 6 weeks?
Yes and no. I mean, no one could have predicted the craziness. I mean, it's an all-time record for unranked teams over ranked teams in the AP poll era so far. But with that said, we were wondering when some of that weirdness from 2020 would start to hit. And for whatever reason, it didn't hit last year. You had the same chalk at the top. You had the usual Clemson and Oklahoma winning six straight conference titles, Ohio State back in the playoff, and then Bama, another title for Saban. So it was all chalk. But yeah, I think you're seeing the lingering effects now into 2021, where all these rosters got that sixth year of eligibility, while the usual powerhouses sent all their guys to the pros early like they usually do. So the gap has narrowed, and you're seeing some fireworks so far.
Hey, you're a Heisman voter. I'm thinking, where'd all the stars go in this league? I mean, the best quarterback in the ACC might be Kenny Pickett of Pittsburgh. That's not supposed to be the case. I'm looking around college football. Spencer Rattler is now benched. I mean, where are the stars? I mean, halfway through, you don't have to, you know, tell me who your favorites are. But that's going to be an interesting choice for your top three in the Heisman balloting on just who they are, because there are no guarantees right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a tough process. Some years it comes out where there's so many deserving candidates, it's really tough to pick one. This year might be the inverse so far, where no one has really jumped out and claimed the top spot yet. You know, some great quarterback performances so far, like Bryce Young and Matt Corral from Ole Miss, they've already taken a loss or two. So not that that is the end-all, be-all, but usually you see these Heisman candidates riding undefeated teams late. But, yeah, I think another thing is it's been the return of the defense. In this weird year, the defense has kind of narrowed the gap on the offense, where it's been such an offense-heavy sport for decades now. I think the defense finally punched back a little bit this year. But, yeah, this thing's wide open. I'm really going to wait and see before putting out any kind of list or anything. I want to see these guys come out and prove it and really go claim some spots here in November coming up.
Halfway through the year, your playoff four would be what?
Well, it's three of the same four I had in my August preview, which is rare. I mean, I had Georgia, Oklahoma, and Ohio State in my preseason book. I think all three still will make it. I think Georgia's the favorite in the SEC. They've proven that on both sides of the ball. Ohio State, I know they took the early loss, but you're seeing a team really grow up quickly. The offense is the best in the country right now statistically and just visually when you watch these guys. The offensive line gives them a ton of time. They have All-American receivers. Oklahoma, now, if you'd asked me a week ago, I'd have said they were shaky, but it looks like they fixed their quarterback spot there against Texas in the second half with five-star Caleb Williams taking over. So they look like the team I expected if they can get that offense clicking with Williams. The fourth spot was a total miss, I'll admit. I had UNC coming out of the ACC. I really was strong on this being a no Clemson year. I thought that they had too much of a transition going on. I thought that a new team would take them over. That part was true, no Clemson, but the roulette ship there missed.
Alabama doesn't have the depth, Brett, that they have last year. And you look at, I mean, they sent six guys to the first round of the NFL draft. They have some new guys. They are breaking in a new quarterback. They're maybe a little bit soft, I would say. But they haven't been able to run the football, which I think is a big thing with Alabama that impacts their entire program. Where do you see halfway through the year on the heels of losing at Texas A&M? And I think they will just whoop Mississippi State if history tells us anything about Saban after a loss. Where is this Alabama team going after 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah, well, I've got some concerns with Alabama, mostly on defense. You know, it was supposed to be a defense first year for Alabama, at least early in the season. When you looked at their roster complexion, who they had coming back, it was more veteran on defense. And even in a loss, even in a win against Florida, their defense gave up 250-plus rushing yards to Florida. Couldn't stop the Gators. And then you see last week, couldn't stop the pass against the backup quarterback at A&M in a shootout. So definitely some concerns with defense. You know, there might be another team out there that can win a shootout against them and give them that deadly second loss to knock him out of the playoff bracket. I think that will happen, whether it be all the way in December in Atlanta against Georgia. That'll be their second loss, or it might come sooner against somebody pulling an upset card. It won't be this week. I agree with you on that. history shows us that Nick Saban, after a regular season loss, he's 8-1 straight up and an average margin of victory of 3 touchdowns, 21.5 points. And, you know, another thing we're saying is he's only had 9 regular season losses since 2008, 9 in 14 years. So it's extremely rare feat, but he comes out and backs it up with a W.
Hey, where you are in this this country, and people know you live in Penn State area, walk me through what the discussion has been like. First of all, what did you think of that game last Saturday at Kinnick Stadium? And then the fallout, I guess we could call it injury or fake injury gate or smelling a rat. How has the discussion been in your part of the country there in Pennsylvania about that game?
Well, yeah, if you've seen Penn State Twitter, the Penn Staters online, they are very angry about the game result. Maybe not so much angry, but they're trying to cheapen the win by saying that, hey, our quarterback was knocked out and we would have won with Sean Clifford in there. And I don't really buy that at all. I don't like that excuse when you talk about backup quarterbacks, because look around the country, for example. Oklahoma put their backup quarterback in against Texas. They were down 28-7 and rallied the biggest comeback that Texas has ever allowed. So back up there, a backup quarterback at A&M just knocked off Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a 22-person game, more so a 44-person game with the Tutti. So you got to be able to play without your starter. It happens to everybody. With that said, though, I think that it was a poor job of coaching, too. Your starter goes down. They never tried to establish the run at all. Now, I know Iowa's a tough defense. They're better in pass defense than run defense, and they tried to throw the ball. That wasn't working. And for what it's worth, they allowed a ton of points, relatively speaking, to Iowa. You know, they bid on those bootleg plays, the play-action game. So there was more than just the quarterback. I'll say, though, the Penn Staters are pretty upset with it. They thought they were the better team, and they still think they have a shot at the Big Ten.
Hey, are you surprised that when Clifford went down, that James Franklin just didn't go to the Wildcat?
Yeah, I mean, that's an option, too. They have such a talented pool of running backs. You know, there were several other things they could have done. They, I don't know. I thought it was deeper than just the quarterback problem. It was, I thought, a miscoaching, and also the defense let them down. If it's supposed to be a defense program there, you got to be able to stop Iowa. Now, I have a ton of respect for Iowa. I put them second in my poll this week, you know, that's not the most dynamic offense. So credit Iowa. They got it done against against Penn State. You know, they knocked out the quarterback. It wasn't a non-contact injury. And of course, I'm not vouching for injuries or aiming for injuries, but that was done because Jack Campbell is an absolute beast. They're a middle linebacker. So, I don't know. There's a lot to dissect from it. I'm not going to cheapen it at all. Iowa deserved to win. The crowd was crazy. You know, I've spoken to a couple Penn State players over the years, and they say the toughest place they played was Iowa. I might not have 100K in the stands, but the fact that they're right on you, they're 2 feet away from you on the sidelines, yelling and even grabbing your shoulder pads and all. So it's an epic place to see a game and tough place to play. So credit Iowa there.
Let's whip around the country. I'm waiting for Herm Edwards and Arizona State to fall apart. They're not. What do you see in that team that has a nice little gaudy record in a year that began with some controversy with the NCAA investigation? What to make of Arizona State?
I really like Arizona State. I think they might be the best team out there in the Pac-12, even better than Oregon. It's going to be a tough one here. It's a Pac-12 South title game in Salt Lake City Saturday night, 10:30 kick. That's going to really determine the South. With Arizona State, it's a very balanced team, and there's playmakers at every level, every position group. First on offense, it's a big, powerful offensive line. They want to establish the run. It's a thunder and lightning package there at running back in this duo. Jaden Daniels, the best quarterback in the conference, I think. And statistically, that would prove out, too. So it's a strong offense. Defensively, was where they made a gain. 10 starters back from last year. It's Antonio Pierce, a familiar NFL name there, coordinating it. They're playing solid football. Now, I wish they had that BYU game back. I think the better team lost that one, just not so much that night, but in general, I think that Arizona State would beat them 9 times out of 10. So they should be or could be 6-0. But, no, it's a solid team, and I think the nation will start to catch on quickly. If they beat Utah here Saturday night, not only do they probably lock in the South, but they still remain in playoff talks, as crazy as that sounds, just because a one-loss Power 5 champ is always going to be in discussion.
That's a 9 o'clock kickoff on ESPN. That game is a pick 'em in Salt Lake City. Let's dive into the SEC, and before we talk about, and because we might be the only people talking about Florida LSU, let's bring James Franklin, Brett, back into this conversation, because you know his name remains as a hot item for open jobs, USC, and it looks like LSU is going to be open. Which job is better for a guy like possibly James Franklin or for anybody in the college football world to be at USC or LSU?
Well, strictly college football speaking, I'd take LSU 10 times out of 10. I mean, just turn on any game in the Coliseum the last couple of years, the place is half empty. I mean, there's no fan support out there. And for whatever, you know, it's a lack of fan support, but then also the media is toughest on you. So I don't really like the chances out there. What used to be a great recruiting spot where they could just walk around the block and lock down five-star talent, that advantage has now neutralized. These kids in Southern California and the West Coast, they don't want to play in empty stadiums. And I've heard quotes on this. You can just look at the trends also. So they're going to the SEC. They're going to big-time power programs, Big Ten, Big 12, Clemson. So you're losing that talent advantage out there. And, you know, the way this thing's going, the Pac-12 is really taking a step back to where the SEC is. So look at LSU. I mean, a talent pool themselves there in the Southeast, Louisiana, roots into Texas, roots into Alabama, Mississippi. Now, you got to imagine the next hire at LSU might live in a world without Nick Saban in that division. Might be a couple of years, but once you take the Nick Saban, you know, dynasty out of that division, it's winnable, and LSU is a premier program down there.
So usually Florida LSU gets a primetime slot on ESPN, or they're that 2:30 CBS game, 2:30 Central Time. This year it is a noon Eastern kick on ESPN. Florida LSU, LSU with all the troubles this year. They're now down four defensive guys and their top five prospects for this game. Florida's an 11-point favorite, Brett. Gosh, doesn't this seem, and I know weird stuff happens between these two teams, but doesn't tomorrow seem like a rout for Dan Mullen and the Gators?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you're right on with that. Now, yeah, you're right. Normally this would be a premier game in the conference, but Kentucky had something to say about that. In back-to-back weeks, knocked off Florida and then blew out LSU last week. I mean, it wasn't even competitive. So, yeah, serious, serious flaws with LSU. You touched on the roster shortages there. That's going to be a problem. I think you just see a team that's going through turmoil right now, a locker room that might be broken a bit. And keep in mind, Florida has revenge on their mind. So as long as they're not throwing any shoes on third down, like that shoe gate last year that cost them, I think Florida rolls here. I think they get back, and get that rivalry back for Florida.
And so Kentucky and Georgia might be the game of the day, Oklahoma State, Texas as well. But Kentucky, all of a sudden, we're talking football. They're up to number 11. That's a credit to what Mark Stoops has done. Played the portal game well. It's benefited. But now they have the beast in Georgia. If I'm giving Mark Stoops 21.5 points, what are you doing in the game at Athens?
I'm taking Georgia. I know that probably makes for poor radio, but Georgia's my number one team. I've stuck with that all the way since August, and they've exceeded my expectations on defense. They're playing incredible football. I think it's like they're averaging 3 points a game or something on defense. Just unbelievable. And Kentucky, yeah, they made some gains on offense, but I don't think this is a dynamic shootout-type team. I will give Mark Stoops a lot of credit. He's right about that transfer portal. That wasn't just coach speak. The way that he pulled in Will Levis from Penn State, talk about flipping some game results. Yeah. If Penn State had Will Levis as a backup last week against Iowa, they may or may not have won that game. That they lost that safety valve there. He goes to Kentucky. And he's playing great football. Last year, 2020, they only threw 7 touchdown passes, and he had 7 three games in. So it's a whole new offense, and credit Mark Stoops. But with that said, you're talking playoff caliber team, and I think it's one of those games where Georgia just suffocates the opponent and wins something like 31-10 or something like that, or 31-7 to get that hook.
Hey, there's going to be a day where we're going to welcome you to a game in Lincoln, or there's going to be a day that you and I are going to go to a game. And we would probably go to Saturday night's game in Knoxville because Lane Kiffin is back, and I think it's going to be wild. Ole Miss, 2.5-point favorite against Tennessee. First, your thoughts on Josh Heupel. You know, since he's been a head coach, you go to his UCF days and what he has done in the short amount of time at Tennessee. I mean, his offense is pretty prolific. They put up big points. They put up 62 and 45 in the last two SEC games. How do you see this one unfolding with Lane Kiffin back in Knoxville against a Tennessee team that is beating teams that they're supposed to, where in the past they were getting upset in those games?
Yeah, well first off, I love the invite out to Lincoln. I think, no spoilers, but I really want to get out there for the 2022 game against Oklahoma. That's the home and home. I just love that rivalry. That matchup means so much to me in the sport. I'd love to get out there. Secondly, yeah, this is the game of the week in terms of drama, definitely. I mean, the way that they ran Lane Kiffin out of town about a decade ago, and now here he is bringing back one of the best offenses in the country. Now, you're right. Tennessee has turned a corner offensively. Out of the gates, it was slow. They lost to Pittsburgh, which actually looks like a decent loss at this point. But, no, they're playing great football. I think it was 90-something points in the last six quarters. They're just lighting it up. Hendon Hooker, a transfer from Virginia Tech, playing sharp football. I didn't expect this transition to happen so quickly. You're talking about the Jeremy Pruitt-style 1980s smash-mouth SEC offense there, going into, you know, transitioning overnight into Josh Heupel's up-tempo UCF, and it's clicked. So I think a ton of points are coming. It's an SEC record in terms of the over-under of points, 83.5. Just unbelievable. And you know what? They might even get it. So I still like Ole Miss, even though it's on the road. They're a more trusted product for me right now. I know Tennessee's hot, but I just need to see more consistency over a full season before I start to pick Tennessee in these prime time spots. So I'll take Ole Miss to cover and win.
I think that'll be one of the more entertaining games of the weekend. Is this the weekend that Oklahoma State loses for the first time? They are in Austin to take on Texas off of the meltdown in Dallas. Does Texas knock off Oklahoma State?
Yeah, I'm taking Texas here for the unranked over top 10, you know, over undefeated team, Oklahoma State. When you look at Oklahoma State, now they haven't really been tested yet. They've won their games, but when you look at their average margin of victory, it's 5.5 points. It's just not sustainable. I mean, you're playing with fire too many times, and these are not great opponents. I mean, they were one-score win over an FCS team, Southern Illinois, a couple other one-score wins. So, yeah, I think Texas, I know they lost, but for three quarters of that game, they demonstrated how solid their offense is, and if they're probably still in the top two in the conference. I think it's really still Oklahoma and Texas. We'll see if those two get a rematch there in Dallas. But I like Texas to win, even though it's coming off a really emotional roller coaster there in the Cotton Bowl. But, I take Texas to win this one.
If I told you that Indiana was 11th in the Big Ten in rush defense for yards allowed per carry, and then also told you that Kenneth Walker is coming to town with Michigan State, but Michigan State's only a 4.5-point favorite in Bloomington, is there something fishy there?
Well, I'm not sure. If there is, I bid on it because I made this one of my best bets of the week in my weekly feature. Michigan State with the 4.5, I really like. You know, a couple things that stand out with Michigan State. Historically, you think of them, right, the D'Antonio years, it was great defense, but just nothing on offense. And so far this year, it's the complete opposite. They're you know, generating long yardage plays. They're number two in my explosive plays metric. You're seeing that with Kenneth Walker at the running back spot. Dalen Naylor had three long touchdowns at receiver last week against Rutgers. Another funny stat with them is all of last year, all of 2020, they didn't rush for a single touchdown from their running back, zero. But Kenneth Walker already has 9 leading the country, so leading running backs in the country, I should say. So I think that they get it done again. You know, they stay undefeated. They hit on enough long yardage plays that they're going to win by more than 4.5.
Your impressions of what you saw last week, Michigan-Nebraska?
Hey, I'm impressed. I mean, I'm impressed. It's just the same old story. I mean, you really wonder when is this going to start to reverse, because you can tell Nebraska's close. You know, Mike Riley team would have lost by 38 or something. And the Steve Scott Frost team each week fighting so hard, you know, leaving last week's loss at the door and really refocusing for the current game. I give them a lot of credit. It's a really tough schedule. Three undefeated Power Fives that they've played. All three, they finished within a score. A couple of those, as you guys know, obviously really could have gone the other way, especially that Michigan State game. And then Oklahoma with a couple special teams plays. But no, I thought Nebraska fought tough. It was a back-and-forth game, and that's, you know, back-and-forth was one of the best teams in the country right now. So there's no moral victories, but I think objectively you could tell that this thing is going in the right direction. It's a way more competitive and stronger program than it was 5 years ago. And I'll keep echoing just to give Scott Frost patience, because I think he's the right guy.
And 4-4 this weekend, or 3-5 with a trip to PJ Flex, Minnesota Golden Gophers?
Yeah, 4-4. I had Nebraska, again, as one of my best bets of the week, along with that Michigan State pick I just mentioned. I really like I said, they're better than the record shows. I put out a lot of top 10 stats, yardage differential, post-play differential, you know, some of the other metrics I look at, and Nebraska is among the top 10 in all of these. I mean, They statistically really are better than the record shows. I know it doesn't help Husker fans out there to hear. It might be bittersweet, but this team is close, and they're really a solid team. And Minnesota has some bad losses. Bowling Green, one of the worst. They were 31-point favorites and lost. But I think Nebraska gets it done by more than the 4 points they're favored by.
Great stuff. Put on your calendar September 17th, 2022. Of course, you'll have to be here on that Friday to do the show in person. But we're going to get you.
We'll get you
taken care of to watch Nebraska Oklahoma with all of us.
Oh, absolutely! You got to show me the taste of the town out there too. I think Misty's I've heard of, the big steakhouse.
So. Yes.
Yeah, yep. I'm really excited to get out there.
All right, it is a done deal, Brett. We'll put it together. We got plenty of time, but I look forward to it. And of course, I always look forward to our chats on Friday. Enjoy the football weekend, week 7 of the college season.
Thanks. Same to you, Gary.
That's Brett Cianci from Pick 6 Previews. Bam. There we go. See how things come together? We've done two things, Josh, this week. We put together a promotion to have a beer fest, a mobile beer fest with 1620 The Zone. And now we've got Brett coming here. Yeah, we will sell it. We'll have, he can be on all the shows promoting Pick 6 Previews. They're good friends of this show.
Do the car wash.
Yeah, we'll do do the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, all right. I like how things come together. Now some news from Nebraska football. If you have not heard... Or you have heard a tragedy in the Chenander family. Eric Chenander, the defensive coordinator for Nebraska, lost his father, Gene, yesterday in a car accident in Iowa at the age of 69. And Nebraska has begun their departure for Minnesota. And before they left, Eric Chenander did mention that he plans to coach this weekend at Minnesota. So Eric Chenander, with a extremely heavy heart, will be in the booth calling defensive signals. And we were touching on this early on in the show. If you followed along this year, and really it's been growing as players get older and they spend more time around their defensive coordinator, there is a true love, not only for the love of football that the defensive coordinator and his players share, but you can tell there is love. There's a respect on all kinds of different levels. And you know that his defensive guys and the entire football program is wrapping their arms around the Chenander family. And they will rally, and tomorrow will be one of those emotional times. But as I'm sure Chins will say, his dad is a coach. He would want him to coach. And he'll coach tomorrow, and then he will go and take care of his family. So he will be calling defensive signals from the press box tomorrow when Nebraska takes on Minnesota. Coming up in the last hour, Dirk Chatelain, plus how Nebraska is to win against Minnesota and stop this two-game winning streak by the Flexter. Is Nebraska, if it feels real close, does it feel far away? Or it feels real close and it's just a little bit away? You know the phrasing? I started the week with phrasing. Must win, can't lose. We'll get into that in the last hour of the Gary Sharp Show on a Football Friday Fiesta on 1620 The Zone.